there's someone out there.
Hey!
No one knows his name. No one knows his face.
Oh, no.
But now, the most terrifying man in the city.
Officer! Officer! Oh, thank God it's you.
Carries a badge.
Edward, unstable, and it was a deceleration injury. As in your old hanging.
You really think a cop did this?
Why not?
Would you automatically assume that it was a police officer instead of some lunatic dressed up like a cop?
Vice squad.
He'll kill again. He enjoys killing.
He strikes without cause, without mercy.
You may be getting information from inside the department.
That means he is one of us.
You see a cop, you cross to the other side of the street.
You're not gonna get me.
Everybody who wants to shoot a cop nowadays has got one hell of an excuse.
This one is my personal life, any of your business.
Since your wife was found dead in a motel room.
You gotta be wrong.
If you wanna see the pretty picture.
Keep your hands where I can see them.
Hold on, I didn't do any of this.
When a cop turns killer, you have the right to remain silent forever. Maniac Cop.
Welcome to They Call This a Movie, testing the strength of friendships one terrible movie at a time. Subscribe to podcasts on iTunes and other podcast services by searching They Call This a Movie. We are part of the Main Naming Network. To find more from us, check out the website at themainnaming.com or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at themainnaming. We are also now proud member of Geek Vibes Nation. You can find them at gvnation.com. Welcome back to They Call This a Movie. This is Anthony Delvecchio. With me, as always, is Dan Aquino and Mark Meyer. Say hello, gentlemen.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Hello. I can't wait for New York City Comic Con. That was what I got out of this movie. Could not wait to be walking them streets again.
Now I'm curious. Why?
I don't know. I saw New York and I was like, hey, I haven't been there in a while.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
I was just, walking the streets.
I have not missed New York one bit since I left.
It was also that I watched this movie after having a conversation with my boss that the last time I literally left the city of Philadelphia for a vacation was Comic-Con 2019.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, I'm sorry.
I mean, that might be most people that we know, maybe. I don't know if you guys went things right before the pandemic, but I was just like, wow. Yeah, every time I've taken a vacation since that point, I've just stayed in Philly or gone over, to Jersey with you guys. Like, it's...
You're like a real-life Charlie.
Yeah.
Never leaves Philly.
Yeah. And then when this movie popped up, I was like, oh, yeah.
I remember outside.
of being in New York. You know.
Bruce Campbell just living it up, banging chicks in motels, no mask on.
Oh, man, living super dangerously.
Didn't wrap it up two ways.
Damn. On either end.
Before we get into Bruce Campbell and his wandering dick, guys, what have you been watching?
I watched The Mitchells versus the Machines on Netflix. Yeah, fantastic movie. I love that Sony Animation is really stepping their game up. You know, Pixar actually has some competition now.
Mm-hmm.
They had obviously Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
And I love this movie. It's very, very unique. Gotcha. Very touching. Yeah, I would highly recommend it. I got the sniffles towards the end. It was, I don't know if you guys have seen it, recommend it. It's very wacky.
Gotcha.
You really have to suspend disbelief in this movie, mm-hmm. but it works.
Sure.
And you'll see it's got a good cast. It's got a good voice cast. The animation again is just, it's very bright and it stands out. It's unique. So that would be my word for it. It's unique.
Okay. Yeah. We've been circling around it. And haven't pulled the trigger on it. I don't think my wife really wants to watch it. So I'll probably have to watch it on my own.
Yeah. Just sneak in some time to watch it. I think you'll enjoy it. I hope you will, because then you could come back here and be like, I didn't fucking like it.
I heard great things. Everything I've heard about it was that it's a lot of fun.
Yes, it definitely is.
What about you, Mark?
I didn't watch much this week, but I will make you guys proud that I did look multiple times on streaming sites for a movie to watch. So I'm getting close, guys, to actually watching movies outside of this podcast and not with Dan.
Step in the right direction.
Step in the right direction. I keep circling around Tenet, even though I'm going to hate it, or possibly while watching it. Prime keeps, due to the algorithm, just keeps wanting me to watch Fighting With My Family.
They know about you.
The wrestler Paige.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Yeah. So it's just always the first thing that pops up on my recommendations every time I go into Prime. Oh. So I may end up watching that soon. Oh. But yeah, I actually went through all of them. Prime, Disney Plus, HBO Max. It's going, hey, I feel like watching a movie. And just didn't settle on anything. And then just watched more people play Resident Evil Village.
my Amazon Prime algorithm is all fucked up because of this podcast.
Yes. Yeah. It's literally like Fighting With My Family and then all of the shitty stuff we've watched on this podcast that is comparable.
It's like, do you want to watch The Mutilator? Like, I've seen it before, but kind of.
God damn it, Amazon. You know me so well.
Yeah.
As for me, I watched one movie this week. It was another Netflix movie called The Woman in the Window. This boasts a pretty impressive cast. Amy Adams, Julianne Moore, Anthony Mackie, Gary Oldman, Wyatt Russell, and I think there's somebody else. But yeah, that's a pretty great cast. The movie is not great. It's okay. It's one of these thriller mystery books that became a bestseller, so they immediately rushed it into production. I believe it was supposed to go into theaters. But because of the pandemic, they sold it to Netflix. It starts off, you know, these movies now, I go into these movies assuming that everybody is a figment of the main character's imagination. And then it's job to tell me I'm wrong. That's how I watch these movies from now on. Everybody is an imaginary person because she's got like agoraphobia and she witnesses a murder across the street. Very similar to Rear Window. It's very influenced by like 50s pulp film noir movies, and then it just turns into this real schlocky movie in the last act out of nowhere. It just goes nuts.
From what I remember in the trailer, they kind of make it that old shtick where Amy Adams is, you know, she's not remembering things correctly, right? It's like, oh, she didn't see anything because she's crazy, or like she's imagining things. Well, is that like, kind of how they went?
She's like agoraphobic, so she's on all these medications and she's drinking on these medications, so that might cause hallucinations. Brian Tyree Henry was the person I forgot. Paperboy from Atlanta. And yeah, it was just like for the cast, which the cast was pretty great. Most of them aren't in it for very long. They've got, you know, one or two scenes. Jennifer Jason Leigh is in it too. But they all have, so like Amy Adams is like the main character, and then everybody else has like two or three scenes maybe. So they probably got them on the cheap just to kind of fill it out. It's okay. I got like, I guessed half of the twists right. Again, you know, it's hard for me to not just assume, even when it's like the obvious answer. You know, this movie is set up to, it's trying to make you think that it's all in her head. And I'm like, well, it probably is. Because of all the movies that have preceded this, you know.
It doesn't sound like it does anything unique.
No, it points to its reference, its influences very strong, because she's, you know, agoraphobic. She's got a bunch of movies, so she's always watching old movies. She's watching like Charade and all that kind of stuff. I think she even watches Rear Window at one point. Oh
man, that's terrible.
But it's okay. It was okay. It's like a 5. Man, not terrible.
With that kind of cast, you hate to see it. It happens a lot, though.
Was that?
It happens a good amount.
Yeah, I mean, when's the last time you watched a Netflix movie? Besides the Mitchell, I guess the Mitchells versus the Robots, or whatever it's called, I guess is the answer for you. But like, how often do you watch a Netflix movie and you're just blown away by it?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I've seen a lot where I've enjoyed them, but never to the point where it's like, oh my God, like, you have to see this movie, you know? I can't remember, again, because Amazon, because of this podcast, that's really my bread and butter. Everything else is like Simpsons or just like random things. Yeah, it's been a long time since I've actually, now that you think about it, like since I've seen a movie where I was really blown away by how good it was. Like maybe for me, the answer is probably Endgame. I was like, holy shit, that was awesome.
Yeah. And, I mean, we didn't even bother to do a favorite movies of 2020 because obviously last year was all fucked up.
Yeah. So it's been a while. You got a point.
Yeah. But that's all I watched, really. We got a Switch, so we've been playing Switch a lot.
Oh, that's cool.
It's dangerous.
Yeah. So
what games did you get?
So we got Luigi's Mansion, which we haven't played yet, but we've been playing Animal Crossing New Horizons was one that we've started playing now. And the other farm one, which I can't say.
Stardew Valley.
That's
there
it.
There you go.
So I've been playing that. And also like the retro games that you could play on it. I'm trying not to play Donkey Kong because I am not good at that. Donkey Kong Country. I realize I am not good at that game.
Well, when we see each other, I'll give you pointers. I'll help you out.
Okay.
Just, any reason to play Donkey Kong, really.
Yeah. My wife is good at it, apparently, and she wanted me to tell you guys how bad I am at that game and how much better she is at it than I am. Because I lost all... She had accumulated about 8 lives, and I lost them all in a span of however long it took her to make popcorn. I lost them all.
That's when you just, like... That happens and you just put the Switch down and run away. Oh, I don't know what happened.
Oh, I was giving her commentary as it was happening.
So like, I just fell down the hole.
I don't know what's going on, but I can't do this game.
In the text message. So for, you know, just to peel back the layers here, we're all friends. If you haven't, you know, gathered, we talk to
each other's phone numbers.
We do. So when you were messaging us, like, yeah, the armadillos, I couldn't get over them. I'm like, oh, they're like the first enemy you come across in the game, I think. The armadillos.
I couldn't get their timing. I couldn't figure it out. For whatever reason, it was just like, I don't understand. I don't understand what they're doing. I don't understand.
If I remember correctly, they roll.
Yeah.
Okay.
But just the timing of the roll, I could not handle. I think it was just a bad night.
Yeah.
It's amazing with games like that, like how it becomes like muscle memory. Like, I don't know how long it's been since Lynn's played that game.
It's probably been like 20 years, but she picked it up pretty quick. And I was like, she gave me like level 5 to play. And I was like, I don't remember really playing it all that much when I was a kid.
Yeah, because my sister did the same thing with Mario 3. To the shock of her daughters.
Yeah,
she hasn't played that game since like the early 90s, picked it up and just went through World 1 without losing a life.
That's awesome.
Just like, hasn't touched video games since then, and just muscle memory and got it back.
I'm telling you, like, this is going to be like super braggadocious, and for all the ladies out there, calm yourselves. I could pick up Donkey Kong Country 2, and I know where like all of the bonus levels are. And all the secret coins. That's my mutant ability.
Yeah, it's ridiculous with that kind of stuff. Like at least we stay engaged with video games a little bit.
Yeah.
But like, I'm sure the two examples we used are people that maybe have touched the controller once every 5 to 6 years.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty cool though.
Yeah, she's liking really cool. Liking the Switch though. So
it's a good purchase for sure.
I bought it for her.
Yeah. And a little bit you.
A little bit me.
And if she likes the retro stuff, there's a lot of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you had to sign up for the Nintendo and Super Nintendo, right? That thing.
It's ridiculously cheap.
Yeah, it's like $1 or something like that.
It's
like
$3 a month and like $20 a year.
Yeah, that's it's a no-brainer.
I guess that's all we watched this week. Yeah. So we are going to take a quick break and listen to some ads so we can pay those bills. And we'll be right back. And welcome back. Now it's time to get into this week's movie. And this week was my pick. And I wanted to do a horror movie this week. We haven't done a horror movie in a while. We did Leprechaun. We did, I guess, Nothing But Trouble was technically a horror comedy. But, like, nothing that was a serious horror movie. Like, a movie that took its horror seriously. So, went to Shudder, see what they had to offer. While after looking over a couple of different options, I wound up choosing Maniac Cop, specifically because of their cast. And the cast list is pretty amazing. It's got Tom Atkins, friend of the show, Tom Atkins. Yeah. You know, he doesn't realize it, but he's a friend of the show. Bruce Campbell, Richard Roundtree, and Robert Zadar, the real star of this movie. Fellas, where are you coming from with Maniac Cop? Dan?
Well, I just like to call it Cop, you know what I mean, guys?
This sort of is ACAP the movie, isn't it?
Big time. Oh, big. There, it's very self-aware. There is a whole scene where they're interviewing, I guess, civilians on the street, and they're like, yeah, you know, like, I know plenty of people who have been killed by cops, and they didn't do anything wrong. And I'm just like, holy shit, this was 1988.
Yeah. And they had the one bootlicker that was they used to just hit you with the slapjack, and then everybody would listen.
That guy screamed boomer energy. Yeah, you know what? I had never seen this movie, but again, when Anthony brought to us the cast, and listen, you have Tom Atkins, you have Bruce Campbell, you don't say no to that. That pairing should have happened more than once. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, those are horror, B-movie horror royalty.
I love that I knew the first three or four names on the list, like, Atkins comes up, and then Bruce Campbell, and then Richard Roundtree pops up, and it's just like, oh, okay. I may have missed the message from Anthony's people in this movie. It felt like every like 80s New York movie that you see in terms of all the establishing shots and stuff, and I think that's what I liked about it. You know, that it felt very much of that time and didn't try to do too much in terms of making it too wacky. Outside of the, you know, the killer, but in this genre, you have to do that. But everything felt very normal New York from at least the movies that I've seen. You know, the cops go to a bar and they meet with the reporters at a bar, you know, and everybody seems to know that cop, even the ladies of the night when he drives by. Felt very much that time period, the pre-Giuliani New York.
Yeah, when it was New York.
Yeah, when it was New York. Tom Atkins is basically becoming in a category that on the actor side used to be only fulfilled by Sam Rockwell. In the fact that if Ant says a movie has Tom Atkins in it, I am immediately watching it. Mm-hmm. No matter if I know the plot. I only seen him before we started this podcast in Season of the Witch, which again was forced upon me is probably the wrong word by Anthony. Because those of you that know out there, I'm not much into the horror genre as much as these two are. But everything I've seen him in since, I'm like, now I want to see him in everything that he's done. It took me a few seconds to recognize Bruce Campbell. Sure. This, I was like, okay. Because I thought he was going to be the killer.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah, this is pre-getting enormous Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh. I mean, he's big now.
Yeah, but it was just, everything about this movie I liked. It's been a while since I've been able to say that about something we've watched on this show. But yeah, it was well done. There were times I was infuriated, but obviously that's the genre of movie. It's and like people have to be idiots to make the plot work. But yeah, I was very, very
pleased. Yeah, I have never seen Maniac Cop. This is my first time. I thought about doing this movie for a while. Thought about doing Maniac Cop 2 for a while, but never really pulled the trigger until I realized we hadn't really done a horror movie in a while. I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. It's not as crazy as I thought it was going to be. It's pretty standard. Your standard kind of killer, almost superhuman sort of killer. Not unlike Friday the 13th, just set in New York City. And he's killing cops that did him wrong. It is in this climate, it's crazy to watch this movie. And it just kind of hit the same notes that you would expect the movie from 2020 or 2021 to hit. About the relationship between cops and civilians and how like they specifically say things like cops become cops so they can be killers. It's kind of wild, but yeah, Tom Atkins is awesome. Bruce Campbell was good in it. Robert Zadar's got some face, doesn't he?
that chin takes up the entire screen, man.
It's really good. I think that's why I liked it, Ant, is your thing that it's not too wacky.
Yeah.
You know, it's like just enough.
I thought it was pretty wacky.
You know, that you get it. It's not like he's not doing stuff that stretches my need to suspend disbelief.
Sure.
In this, but it's has enough of that insane stuff to make it an enjoyable.
Sure.
I liked this movie for about 2/3 of it. And then I found myself getting kind of bored towards the end.
Sure.
Because it turned into more of like an action movie, and I was like, you know, it kind of got rid of the horror aspect of it. And I didn't like the direction they went with the maniac, the killer, and how he kind of had someone helping him. Like, I would have rather have just seen this dude, you know, he came back from the dead and he's exacting his revenge on New York for some reason. Yeah, I thought they took it an interesting way. Tom Atkins was awesome in it as the like pretty much the guy who's he's questioning everything. I love when Atkins is faced with that somber moment. He delivers those somber moments so well in any movie he's in, like where he really has to deliver a line that, you know, like he's all on his own and he's the only in every movie he's the only one who believes what's going on.
Yeah,
he can see through the bullshit and he delivers those lines just like, you know, he knows, like, well, why would he be, he's a cop, god damn it, and it couldn't be him. And you feel like, yeah Tom, you know better. And that's why I root for Tom Atkins, because he's what we need now, because he could see through the bullshit.
Yeah.
You can correct me if I'm wrong, because you just watched it slightly more recently than me, Ant. Does he ever light his cigarette?
That's a fair question. I have no idea. I wasn't paying that close attention.
I've seen him put it in his mouth multiple times, but I never know if I remember him lighting it.
The only issue with this movie is Tom Atkins doesn't nail a chick. Like he does in every movie, like a super smoking hot chick.
He totally has banged the reporter, though.
Yeah.
You would think so. There's definitely chemistry there, but at least in Season of the Witch, I think he's married in Season of the Witch, is he not?
I think he's divorced or separated.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, he is fucking everybody in that movie. Right. Several nurses, and then obviously the girl.
And I think in Night of the Creeps, I think he's getting it on with someone as well.
I don't remember. It's been a while.
It's been a while. But I'm just assuming, you know, he's just wherever he walks.
He pretty much had Officer Mallory ready.
I guess.
You know, when he goes, here's the key to my unit, my apartment, you know.
I thought you were talking about.
I thought you were going to be with me. He's like, no, I got things.
Yeah, he totally could have fucked her. I love how the fact that he works with Sally, the woman that is helping Maniac Cop, and he must have been working with her for 20 years. He has no idea who she is because he doesn't want to fuck her.
That's probably what it was. And the first thing he notices is her gimpy leg.
Yeah.
He's like, oh god.
Because he knows every woman that he thinks is fuckable. He knows them. He knows the girl at the bar that dies in the opening.
Yeah.
He knows the reporter who he's definitely fucked before. He knows Teresa. Those are the three women in the movie. He knows, like, oh yeah, I totally know who Teresa is. I totally know this reporter. And I totally know that girl that died in the beginning. Because they're all fuckable.
Yeah.
Sally, though, no. Ooh.
There's someone in the department named Sally? Even no one's told me.
Even that one guy is like, she was never much to look at.
Yeah, that's right. Like, man, this guy knows everything. This cop basically knows the entire mystery, and he's breaking it down for Tom Atkins.
Officer exposition.
Right. Like, Officer Cordell, like, I knew that guy. That is to say, I know him. But he knows everything about this guy. He was murdered. He was set up by the city. Well, holy shit, now we know for sure who it is.
Those damn politicians making him want to hold cops accountable. Damn them.
That is the entire crux of this movie, that this guy cheats death to come back and exact a revenge on the people that held him accountable for his actions.
And he only gets one of them.
Yeah.
Right. He gets the commissioner, I think.
Yeah. It's the captain.
He does get the captain, but the captain I don't think the captain did anything.
No.
I'm not sure. Yeah, he exacts his revenge. He wants the mayor. He doesn't get close to the mayor.
No.
He exacts his revenge on a bartender.
Yeah.
In the first scene. Yeah, that'll show him.
Yeah, I think the only one that doesn't match up victim-wise is that guy that he handcuffs. Like, the two victims in the middle from the beginning until they kind of figure it out. Mm-hmm. Like, the rest of them all have some connection to cops. Like,
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, he kills a bunch of cops.
He kills cops. He kills the first girl who I guess is working at a cop bar. That's a thin relation. And there's the guy he handcuffs, which we don't know what his relationship would be. The guy that he sticks in the cement. And the guy in the car. And the guy in the car that he throws through the windshield. That guy didn't have a relationship to the cops.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Those two, and then everything else is basically somewhat connected.
Yeah. So they do say at some point that it's her. It's Sally goes to him, like, I thought you were just going to kill the people that were... I thought you were going to kill killers and drug dealers and the people that did this to you, not innocent people. Which I guess is like, yeah, that's how we cover that one up.
Right.
But it's like... All right, well, you're saying his MO is that he's trying to kill the people that this, but most of his body count has nothing to do with that.
No, yeah, the majority of it is innocent people.
Yeah.
It
makes him a maniac, though, I guess.
It does, that, yeah.
And part of the ACAB as well is the little racial profiling sprinkled in at the very beginning.
Oh, yeah, when she has to say Puerto Ricans, those two Puerto Rican guys are after me. It's like, man, why she got to call them out by their possible ethnicity?
Well, New York in 1988, I guess.
Yeah. Like, how do you know? How do you know they're Puerto Rican?
Yeah. And then the cops afterwards was like, no, it has to be those two guys.
Well, to be fair, there is a witness, I think. That's why the cop says that. Right, because the witness mentioned those two guys.
They were fingered as someone, a couple guys that were hassling, that were attacking her.
They did mug her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure they tried to rape her. They followed her, which was weird.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah, you probably wouldn't want to, like, chase after. Like, I don't know. I've never tried to attack somebody at night in New York City.
You sure you haven't? But this is how I would do it.
Hold her edit point so I don't incriminate myself.
Yeah, I love the Tom Atkins moment where he goes, look at that hand mark on that throat. Do you think any one of those scrunk cats could have done it? And the other cop's just basically like, it's too much paperwork to do more than this. Let's just put them away.
Well, the answer should have been, maybe that's why it's our job to investigate it.
I'm assuming those two guys rotted in a jail cell for the rest of their lives.
Oh yeah, those guys were
on that one.
They were definitely casualties of the system. But yeah, I think there was definitely some things I enjoyed about it. I loved the mystery at the beginning. Was it Tom Atkins? Was it Bruce Campbell? Is it a wild card? And I kind of wanted it to be Tom Atkins, but knowing that we saw basically Jaws from James Bond is in this movie.
Yeah.
It's got to be him. But
yeah.
I held out hope because I thought that would have been cool. Like, you know, Tom Atkins was like a jaded cop.
Sure.
And like, oh, you know, they weren't going to give him his pension or something like that. I don't know.
It's funny because there really was a mystery to it, because in the opening credits, you see Maniac Cop getting dressed and you see his name tag that says Cordell on it.
Yeah. I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
Oh. It was like a Batman montage at the beginning, right?
Yeah.
When he's putting the boots on and then the cowl and all that. Like, that would have been awesome. It's Maniac Cop. Not as cool. Not as cool putting on his little cap.
Yeah. And his white gloves.
His white gloves. Yeah. His uni. Yeah. This movie was I overall enjoyed it, but I did find myself getting a little bored. Yeah. And the ending was like laughable for me, where He raises his hand from the pier. There's like 100 people there. Someone probably would be like, hey, we got one. I see you.
There's some beat cop season. He's like, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut.
Right. It's like that scene in the town where they roll up with all the automatic weapons and the cop is just like, nope, not today, and looks the other way. That would be how I would be a cop, by the way.
Yeah,
I didn't see anything ever.
Yep.
Like Officer Aquino, like you've never arrested anybody or done anything. No, you know, I don't see any crime. It's weird. I don't know what to tell you.
I'd be, if I were a cop, every woman that cried would immediately not get a ticket.
Oh my God, not
stop. No. All right, just don't do it again, please. Sorry.
Even guys who cry, I'd probably start to feel really awkward. Okay, man, but get it together. Just don't do it again.
So, Maniac Cop from 1988 is directed by William Lustig, who did Maniac Cop 1, 2, and 3, and the movie Maniac, and is directed by Larry Cohen, who wrote, besides this movie, he also wrote It's Alive. He also wrote Cue the Winged Serpent, The Great, The Stuff, Maniac Cop, Maniac Cop 2, Maniac Cop 3. He's
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
And that's about it. He's got some interesting ones. Cellular, the Jason Statham movie. I think Chris Evans is in that one. Oh, Phone really? Booth, he wrote.
Wow. Yeah, this guy has a pretty extensive career.
Yeah. Wrote a lot of TV. Yeah,
that's awesome.
A lot of stuff.
You could definitely see the parallels between Maniac Cop and Maniac.
Yeah.
Obviously, other than the title. The aesthetic is super, super similar.
Super dirty New York.
Yeah, very grungy, very dirty.
Kind of love those movies, though. These movies that just, like, we got about $500,000 budget. We're going to shoot mostly at night. And we're going to steal shots on the New York City street without permits as fast as we can. And we're going to find the shittiest apartment buildings to shoot in. This movie's like Basket Case, it reminds me of.
Oh, yeah. Just like a really seedy motel.
Yeah. Brain Damage, I think, is another one. Like, yep. Real gross New York mid-80s.
Yeah.
Stars, Tom Atkins, Bruce Campbell, Laureen Landon, Richard Roundtree, Robert Zadar, William Smith, Cherise North, and Nina Arvison. It's IMDb score of 6.0 and a Rotten Tomato score of 50%. Not bad at all. Budget, $1.1 million. Box office, $671,000.
Close, but no cigar.
Yeah.
How did this get a sequel?
I made two sequels.
Yeah, that's wild.
I guess when you're, you know, it's a low risk sort of movie, you're only spending $1 million. I mean, I'm sure it is surprising it only made that much, because, you know, horror movies just made gangbusters in theaters.
Yeah, that is surprising. And like, this movie's competent enough where you could imagine it making its money.
Yeah. Not exactly. It might not have gone to a whole lot of theaters. I could see that happening.
Yeah. That's, and like you said, I don't think Bruce Campbell was really, I don't think he was like a big name yet. I mean, obviously he was in Evil Dead.
Yeah.
When did Evil Dead 2 come out? It had to have been around that time too, right?
I think so. 87. So it was the year before.
Year before. So yeah, I guess he was just really starting to get that popularity.
Yeah. I mean, he's still just doing genre movies though.
Mm-hmm. He looked great in this movie, by the way.
Yeah.
And when the wife catches him in bed with the other cop, and they never really delve into that other than just like, yeah, you know, you cheated on your wife. The end.
Yep.
But he has his shirt off. He looks good.
He kind of gets over the fact that his wife was dead. Pretty.
I think that happens when you're you know, banging some strange. I think it's a little. It softens the blow.
I mean, not strange. It is his partner.
That is true. Yeah, he did know her. Okay, so, but still, I think it lessens the blow when you're already, you've pretty much moved on.
Yeah, I mean, they do have a very strained relationship, to say the least.
Yeah. I'm glad that, maybe they did that on purpose, where it was like, hey, listen, you guys hate each other, so it's going to be totally okay when you find him, you know, giving it to his partner.
Is this Sam Raimi or Ted Raimi? I thought it was Ted Raimi, but the trivia says...
It looks like Sam.
I think it might be Sam.
The reporter.
Yeah.
It looks like him.
Sam Raimi, yep. Sam Raimi is the parade reporter here.
Yep. That's cool. That's a nice little addition.
Call back to Evil Dead.
Yeah. It's awesome. Yeah, anytime you see, though, he's a decent fill-in, you know? Like, it's not like M. Night Shyamalan.
Right.
When he kind of forces himself into his movies. It's like, oh, God.
Yeah. You guys want to get into the plot?
Sure.
Yeah, what do you got for us, Dan?
Okay, so just going to give a quick shout-out to our good friend, listener of the podcast, Tia, and her podcast, The Top 10 with Tia. It's a weekly podcast where Tia and her best friend, her bestest friend, I'm going to assume, Brittany, get together, and they discuss top 10 lists. So, you know, just the top 10 horror movies, top 10 mothers in TV or movies. A lot of different subjects. I'm sure there's something for everybody. If you want to give it a listen, go to her Twitter. It's TC_Stark, and she posts her stuff there. Geek Vibes Nation also posts it, I believe, and she is the head writer for Geek Vibes Nation. So you can find her there on Twitter or at Geek Vibes Nation.
Great. And we are going to take a quick break, and you are going to listen to some messages from friends of the podcast. So we will be back in a second.
Hey, this is Ken M.
Padawan J.
Coach Duffy.
From the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour podcast. Every week, the ODPH is talking sports, movies, TV, comics, and more. It's always a parlay of topics on each episode. You can find the ODPH on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, and wherever you find great podcasts, such as the one you're listening to right now. Don't forget to check out OchoDuroParlayHour.com, where you can find the links to all of the ODPH social media accounts, links to the bands whose music you hear each week on the show, hashtag 607 podcast info, and parlay points, our companion blog section of the show. Thanks for listening to the ODPH. Now get back to your regularly scheduled podcasts.
Welcome, travelers. Seems like you're looking for a story. Well, I got one for you. It involves adventure, friendship, and all
Earl, why don't you tell him about that time I stole that big-ass melon?
Yeah, I was going for more.
Or you could tell him about the time I kicked your ass, Earl.
I wouldn't ever tell him.
Do I need to get my ref gear on?
Okay, everyone, shut up. Now come with me as I tell you a story from afar.
Hey, everybody. My name's David. I'm the DM for From Afar Podcast. From Afar Podcast is all about four friends separated by distance, but brought together by adventure. Hope you all stop by and give us a listen. Thanks.
And welcome back. Now it's time to get into the plot for Maniac Cop. We open on a faceless police officer getting dressed into his uniform in a stylized slow-mo shot against black background as the credits roll. The badge says Cordell, so no mystery in this movie.
I just want to make sure we note that I love the music in this opening.
Okay.
The music was fantastic. It's very really set the mood.
Then we cut to a woman at leaving a Manhattan bar at night alone. There's lightning, but also no evidence of a storm anywhere, so I don't know why. She walks down what appears to be a Greenwich Village street when she's jumped by a couple of street toughs looking to take advantage of her. She fights them off with a purse and runs off as an unhelpful resident looks on and minds his own business. Toughs chase after her until she hides out in a playground in the park as they search for her. She runs off further into the park. She comes across a police officer. So she goes up to him to help, unnecessarily labeling the two men as Puerto Ricans. Where the officer grabs her by the neck and snaps it as the Toughs look on.
I love that part where the thugs, is that an okay word to use here? The thugs, the would-be muggers. I like how they're looking on. And then they're like, they feel bad for the woman. Like, you were going to do something kind of similar. Like, now you kind of know what it's like.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. We were going to do that.
Real rude awakening.
Right. Whoa,
we're
man.
Monsters.
Right. So that's what it looks like? Oh, well, we have to like rethink our actions here.
Real sobering moment for those two toughs, street toughs. The next morning, the cops have taped off the crime scene and the two toughs are arrested. Detective Frank McCray, played by Tom Atkins, walks into the coroner's office. Coroner tells Frank that she died from a snapped vertebrae and a crushed larynx. Frank doesn't believe that the two toughs could have done something like this with their bare hands. Frank mentions he knew the girl and that the toughs said it was a cop that did it, and he thinks it's a possibility. Later, the couple is driving erratically, passing a drink back and forth in the car when the guy slams on the brakes, nearly running a red light.
You know, the 80s.
Yeah. Can drive around drunk, just slap on the wrist telling you, get home, you crazy kids. Except for when you run into a maniac cop, though. As the couple makes out at the light, the cop comes up and knocks on the window and motions for the guy to step out of the car. Guy does, and the cop makes him do a breathalyzer. And then when he's doing so, the cop slashes the guy in the face and throat with a knife and then tosses him into the windshield.
Yeah, my favorite part of this whole scene was the guy walks up to him, you know, after doing all the drinking and driving and almost running a red light in the car and goes, hey, man, I can't get any more tickets. I'm going to lose. They're going to lose my license.
Yeah, that's what you tell the cop. Remember, kids, don't tell the cops shit.
Right. Yeah, lawyer up.
So the girl freaks out after her boyfriend goes to the windshield and she gets away into the driver's side and then drives off. Frank gets called into the police commissioner's office, played by Richard Roundtree. Commish is a little pissed off that Frank is going around saying that he thinks that it's a cop that's been killing all these people. Commish wishes he puts out the theory that it's a person dressed as a police officer in order to discredit the force. Frank says that he wants to investigate the police, look for someone with a history of mental disturbances, but the commish tells him to keep it quiet. And then the commission questions whether or not Frank could have done it, because Frank tried to kill himself after his partner was killed 10 years prior. At night, a random guy tries to get into his car, but Maniac Cop pops up and slaps a pair of handcuffs on him behind his back. Guy tries to make a break for it and manages to get to an apartment building, but no one will answer the door, so he goes running until he falls over wet cement, and then Maniac Cop drowns him in wet cement.
Pretty cool kill.
Yeah.
You don't see that very often.
No. Especially when, in the morning, they have to jackhammer his head out of the sidewalk.
Wait, that must have been pretty debilitating for those workers, right? You got to work around that body, get to it.
And it shows you how long he's been there.
Yeah. Hours.
And he was able to solidify.
Right, in New York City, no one walked by there. Or, judging by the beginning, someone did and just minded their own business.
Yeah,
like, oh, not for me.
Well, it was the Warriors version of New York, so.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
So Frank meets with Gina, a New York news reporter whom Frank has no doubt fucked before, because it's Tom Atkins, and the only constant in Tom Atkins movies is his love of cheap beer and pussy.
That was in your notes, right?
Yeah.
I'm glad you wrote that sentence down. A great sentence. I can just imagine you're like, yep, cheap beer and pussy.
He tells her that she needs to get the word out about Maniac Cops so that people are aware and wary of cops. So she does a news report the next night and gets the public into a frenzy. And we see one woman get pulled over by a cop and she blows his head off. But he's not the guy. He's just some rookie cop. He looked like he was like 16 years old. And his head gets blown the fuck off.
That's, I wonder, squid. What she was pulled over for.
I don't know. I don't even know if she was pulled over or she was like lost. So she pulls over. So the cop pulls over to see if he can help her, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point. Is it just, or maybe she's like loitering or something. I don't know.
I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, that cop made a big mistake.
They put it all into that squib.
They did. Yeah, that was a pretty brutal kill.
So the commissioner has a meeting with the police captain and a counselor for the city. Captain is really upset about the state of things and what it's like to be a cop now. Boo-hoo. He says everyone is trying to get the cop that pulled him over for a speeding ticket killed by claiming that they're the Maniac Cop. And the counselor is going full mayor from Jaws, worrying about the tourism numbers, which apparently he's got numbers for about a 3-day span.
In New
Tourism's
York.
Down 38%. We got to do something about this.
I think
nobody's
going
to Kratz anymore.
Right. You'll be fine. People will come.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think we've talked about it on this podcast before about the unappealing idea of having a vacation in New York City, but that's
people
fine.
Do it.
People
yeah.
do it. It's not worth it, everybody.
Right. If stay away. Our friend from the Isle of Man, do not come to New York City on holiday.
Yeah. It ain't worth it. Like 3 days tops and you've seen what you need to see.
Yeah.
I agree. That's why I like Comic-Con.
There you go.
That's true. Yeah, you just get those 3 days and you're done.
Yeah. The commish issues a challenge to the police captain. The captain says he's going to get him, but he always is one step ahead of him. The reason that he's getting inside info, and that must mean that he is a cop. And then we cut to Officer Jack Forrest getting ready for work. His wife, Ellen, meanwhile, is cutting out newspaper clippings of the Maniac Cop. It is obviously a strained marriage to the point where the wife may think that her husband may be the Maniac Cop. They have an argument over their relationship, and he goes to work. When he leaves, he gets a call from a woman telling Ellen that Jack is going out to kill more people. So the wife grabs a gun and sets out to follow her husband. She follows Jack to a seedy motel, and it turns out that Jack is just fucking his police partner. Jack sort of almost blames his wife for catching him.
But, you know, in hindsight, you know, if someone calls you and it's like, yeah, your husband's the Maniac Cop, and then you find him just banging another woman, I'd feel a little bit more relieved.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God he's not murdering people.
Yeah.
He's just murdering pussy. It's fine.
Just slaying that poon. It is true, though. Yeah, I would be relieved. It's like, thank God I'm not married to a murderer. He's just an asshole.
Right. He's just an adulterer. It's way better.
I mean, she's the one that stopped going to marriage counseling.
It is her fault. As Bruce Campbell is very quick to point out. This is on you.
Yeah. And she didn't have to follow him, is what he says. Why did you follow me?
You know, I can only imagine in that situation, if you're a guy, you're definitely grasping at straws for just anything at that point, right?
Just dead to rights, yeah.
Yeah, literally with your pants down.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, why did you follow me? I wanted to tell you. He goes through the whole shebang.
Yeah.
And I get it. I'm with Bruce Campbell on this.
Yeah, it's like, why'd you follow me? Because I'm suspicious of you for obvious reasons.
And he doesn't even try to, like, chase after her.
Nope.
He's like, all right, well, that's done.
Yep. So I'm going to hear about that tomorrow. Right. But I guess he didn't even bother to, like, check in on her. Because he doesn't realize that she's dead until the captain tells him.
Right. Like, so he doesn't go home for the night?
Well, no. He definitely stayed the night at the motel.
Right.
So I guess Maniac Cop was just hanging out in the van waiting for him to leave the motel so he could place the body in there.
Right. It worked out perfectly.
Yeah. Maniac Cop, he plays a long game.
Yeah. Is he truly a maniac?
He doesn't seem like it. He seems too plotting.
He's very calculated. Calculated cop. That's what he is.
And then she pulls a gun on both of them, and then they run. And then she runs off. Maniac Cop snatches her ass up and pulls her into an unmarked van. In the morning, maid goes to clean the motel room, and she finds the wife's lifeless body in the bed, her throat slashed. So Captain Ripley, at the police station, walks into the squad room and pulls Jack Forrest out to talk to him. He starts questioning Forrest about his marriage. He tells Jack that his wife was found dead with her throat slashed. And then Jack admits to Ripley that he was in the motel room last night. So Ripley says that he has to read him his rights. Jack is arrested, and Frank and Captain Ripley are interrogating him. Jack does admit that he was seeing someone, and then his lawyer shows up. His lawyer ushers the cops outside, and basically he tells Jack that he thinks he killed those people, and then that they're going to figure out a defense. Jack says he has a witness that says he didn't do it, but doesn't want to name her until he needs to because it could ruin her career. So Frank and Captain Ripley have a drink at the bar as they watch a news report of civilians talking about how much they don't trust cops. ACAB, baby.
You know, going back, if I'm Bruce Campbell and it's like, hey, like, you have a witness for an alibi, I don't want to bring her in. It might ruin me. I would have name dropped so fast.
Yeah.
I'm wanted for murder here, essentially, right? And yep. They got me dead to rights. I'm sorry. I'm throwing you under the bus with me, sweetheart.
Yeah. Like, why haven't you come forward yet saying that I didn't kill anybody?
Right. Yeah. Like, and she knows about it.
Yeah.
So she to help her brother out.
She goes to work that day. She's like, yeah. All right, well, my lover is in jail right now because they think he murdered people, but I'm going to out here pretend to be a hooker.
Best of luck.
I mean, I guess maybe she didn't have the days off.
Justice will prevail. That's what it
That's
is.
That's the whole thing. Jack has full faith in the legal system that he's going to get off because he didn't do it.
Nope. It doesn't work like that sometimes.
Yeah. A little Boy Scout.
Yeah.
Frank says that he thinks Jack is being set up by the real Maniac Cop. So Frank goes to visit Jack in prison, and Jack tells Frank that he was seeing his partner, Teresa. So Frank asks him where he could find her, and Jack tells him that she's on duty tonight. So Teresa is working vice as a hooker, and brushes off a potential John, who makes her as a cop almost immediately. As the John leaves, she goes into the alley for a cigarette, and Maniac Cop is there. She identifies herself as a cop, showing her badge, but Maniac Cop tries to throttle her. She shoots him a couple times, and at that moment Frank drives by and hears the gunshots and goes into the alley. He gets a few shots off too and gets attacked by Maniac Cop, but then Maniac Cop disappears. So Frank takes Teresa to a bar and they have a few drinks to settle their nerves. Teresa tells Frank that the only person she told about her and Jack's relationship is a woman named Sally Nolan. Frank doesn't know who she is despite being on the job for 20 years, possibly because Frank doesn't want to fuck her. And then Teresa mentions that she walks with a cane. And you definitely know that Frank doesn't want to fuck her.
Right. He makes up his, but you can see it in the scene. Like, oh, no, I don't want that.
Oh, Kane, gross.
Can't use that in sex.
So Frank calls Teresa a cab and sends her to his apartment to hide out for a couple days. We know what you're doing, Frank.
Yeah, it's very obvious.
Classic Tom Atkins move.
Yeah, get he her wrote drunk. That in.
Yeah.
Is there any way I could be banging her?
So Frank goes to the precinct to try and get some info, and he runs into Sally Nolan. He kind of gives her a few threads of information to let her know that he's on the case, including that Teresa got attacked, but she's fine now. He leaves, but waits for her in the parking lot for her to leave, and he tails her. He follows her to the docks, where she meets with Maniac Cop. She pleads with him to not kill the girl, just the commissioner and the mayor. She calls him by name Matt, and says that she thought he would only kill drug dealers and killers. Frank watches on, but knocks over a piece of wood, causing Sally to fire wildly into the night, but she winds up thinking it's just a cat. And then Frank goes to leave and gets stopped by the night watchman, who also mentioned that the dock is going to be leveled in the next week. So Frank goes to the records department and looks up all the information that he can find on Matt Cordell. We find out that Matt Cordell was a sort of a legend in the forest, but he was a shitty cop because he's shoot first, ask questions later type of guy. Never
that made him a legend.
Yeah, made him a legend. I think this is where the movie starts to just steep into fantasy just a little bit. It's like, you know, cops always do the job the right way. So Frank and the cop that runs the records department talk about how Cordell got locked up for quote unquote, they brush it off like it's silly, for violating people's rights.
He was like, violated rights or something along those lines. I guess killers have rights too. Yeah, they do, unfortunately. That's how the law works.
The guy also mentions that Cordell had a girl on the force and threw herself out a window when he died, and she survived and is now crippled.
Still ass ugly, though, apparently.
It's such a detail that just does not need to... Yeah, she wasn't much to look at, but she was a nice girl.
Right, yeah. And you know what? It's not fair, because that's like... When you're describing a man, no other guy is going to say that, right? Yeah. Like, yeah, he wasn't much to look at. But when they're describing a woman, it's so sexist.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, not much to look at. Or she was hot. And it's like, man, it's such a one-way street.
Yeah.
And it was, even back then, it was even worse.
Yeah. It's also funny that he's sad for her about trying to kill herself, because tough thing to do for a Catholic girl.
Tough thing to do for anybody, I guess. Right? Only Catholic women have it hard.
So Frank, after he has this weird conversation with this guy who just knows everything, Frank leaves, and maniac cop sleeps on a bench in the abandoned pier, his eyes wide open as he dreams of the judge that put him away, and then back to the time where he got stabbed in the showers.
Oh, that scene when they're checking him into the prison goes on forever.
Yeah.
Like, we get it. They all hate him.
Yeah. It's like 2 full minutes of just cross dissolves of prisoners just like, look who it is, guys.
Fresh
Cordell.
Right. They're throwing their cigarettes at him. Yeah. All right. Oh, well.
How the turntables
have turned. Yeah. That I was like, they're going to go again, aren't they? They are. They're doing another one. This is great. But yeah, it went on forever.
So then Teresa visits Jack in prison along with Frank, and they tell him that they have a reason to believe that it is Cordell that's been killing people, and he didn't really die when he was supposed to. So Frank leaves the visitation room to let Teresa and Jack talk, and heads to Sally's desk. He sees she's been looking at the Maniac Cop file, and then Frank looks through her purse and finds a white glove similar to Maniac Cop's. And then Sally pops up out of nowhere and beats Frank with the cane, screaming that, quote unquote, he knows and there's no stopping him. She really wallops Frank and then leaves without her cane. She stumbles through the hallway. She sees a cop that's been hung from the ceiling and screams. As she screams, Frank goes to calm her down and brings her back into the room. But Maniac Cop busts through a glass window and pulls her through a door. And Maniac Cop throttles her, slams her into the wall as Frank tries to shoot Maniac Cop, but he's just shrugging off all the bullets. Maniac Cop tosses her aside, seemingly killing her. Then grabs Frank and starts tossing him around. Teresa comes out of the visitation room to investigate the noise, and she sees a couple of cops that have been killed outside of the investigation room. So Jack and Teresa leave the visitation room, and Jack tells Teresa to go get into Frank's car, and he's going to find Frank, and they'll leave. So she goes down and waits in the car. Meanwhile, Frank gets tossed out the window and lands onto a cab next to the car Teresa is sitting in. Jack finds a broken window.
And that's when I turned off the movie.
Right. That was a little bit of a bummer. Like, oh man, Tom Atkins is gonna make it to the end of the movie.
Right. Yeah, I would like to see him at least have a last stand.
Right. Yeah, he's like the last person that gets killed by a maniac cop.
Yeah. Or like try and blow him up or something like that, you know?
Right. Create a diversion.
Yeah, like I'm imagining like Dr. Loomis at the end of Halloween 2 just blowing things shit up.
Right. Like they have that final confrontation where, you know, Tom Atkins, like, you used to be a legend on the force. What happened to you? And look what you've become, man. And it's just like all that stuff. And then he just gets blown away or something. But no, he just gets thrown unceremoniously out the window.
Yeah. And then Maniac Cop says, you know, you're either with me or against me. And then Tom Atkins says, only a maniac cop deals with in absolutes.
Oh, I did watch Phantom Menace over the weekend.
Oh, yeah?
You're full of shit, man.
No!
Qui-Gon Jinn didn't even want to bring Anakin with him at first. He didn't want it.
Crazy.
This is for another time. Only a maniac cop deals in absolutes. That's great.
That's the Instagram post this week.
Yep. it's never been so clear.
Jack finds a broken window and sees Frank on top of the cab. And then a couple of beat cops show up. But he pulls a gun on them and manages to escape by telling them to lie on the ground. Finds Teresa and they leave together. So Jack and Teresa head to Sing Sing prison in order to keep Frank's appointment with the prison coroner. They start asking questions about Matt Cordell, the Matt Cordell case, posing as Frank. He eventually asks for some identification and the game is up. They say that Frank has been killed. And he realizes that Jack is wanted for the murder. But they tell him that the cops were murdered by Cordell because they know he wasn't dead at the prison at the time. And we flash back to the coroner, realizing that Cordell was still alive on the table, and then he performs CPR on him. Coroner says that he was more alive than he was more dead than alive when they released him, and he was suffering severe brain damage, and he couldn't go back into prison population, so that's why they released him and pretended he died. And then he kicks him out of his office. So we hit the St. Patrick's Day parade as Jack and Teresa expect Cordell to show up and try to kill the chief of police and the mayor. Teresa goes to talk to the commissioner while Jack lays low, looking for Cordell. She tells the commish that Cordell is doing the killings and that Frank was the one that thought that was him at first. So then the commish says that Frank left a message on his answering machine talking about his theory, but it's vague enough where it means it could have been anybody that he was talking about in terms of who he thinks the killer was. So the commissioner has Teresa arrested for accessory to murder, and she pleads with him not to go to the parade because Cordell's planning to kill him and the mayor. Him and Captain Riley leave her in the hands of a cop, who then immediately tries to have sex with her, maybe? As the commish and the captain waits for the elevator, they're stabbed by maniac cop in the hallway. But actually, the cop isn't trying to have sex with her. He just wants her to admit to her role in the killing so he could get the collar and get a promotion out of it. He gets mad.
Which is kind of refreshing.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Because I definitely felt like, oh my god, he's going to try to bang her.
Yep.
No, he was actually looking out for his career.
Yeah. Which is still sleazy, but it's a different kind of sleazy.
But it's still, it's
ambitious.
Cool. Right. Because I would have kind of went the same way. Like, listen, in my mind, you're guilty. So just admit it and I get a raise. My kids get, you know, they get to go to college. Everything works out.
Yeah. It's like, it doesn't matter to you. You're going to jail either way. At least to help a lowly guy out.
Right. You know? Yeah. I'm trying to make detective.
He gets mad when she says she wants a lawyer before they continue talking, so he decides to book her like he was supposed to do. As they walk down the hallway, maniac cop guts him with a knife, killing him. Teresa then has to pull a dead cop because she's handcuffed to him around, trying to hide in an office. She takes the keys off the dead cop's belt and undoes the cuffs, just as maniac cop breaks down the door. So Teresa climbs out the window onto the roof. Meanwhile, a couple of cops make Jack on the street and handcuff him into the back of the paddy wagon. The maniac cop grabs the driver out the front seat and then drives off with Jack in the back. So Teresa jumps into a cruiser with a cop and tells him to drive after the paddy wagon, and a car chase ensues. Over the radio, they make an announcement that he's headed to the pier, and she has an idea of exactly where they're going. So they go racing through the city down to the pier, maniac cop running over the night watchman as they drive past. So he makes it to the pier and starts hacking at the back of the door of the paddy wagon. Jack jumps out of the car just as the maniac cop knocks down the back door. And then picks him up and tosses him at Teresa as she shows up with a shotgun. She drops the shotgun, a maniac cop picks it up. The other cop that drove Teresa gets shot by maniac cop, and then Jack kicks the gun out of his hands. There's a tussle, and the maniac cop tries to jump in the front seat of the paddy wagon and tries to drive off. But Jack jumps onto the side and starts punching maniac cop, and distracts him enough that he drives into a beam that goes through the windshield and pins him to the seat, and then he drives off the pier. Jack jumps off the paddy wagon as it falls, and swims back to shore. Eventually, the cops come and pull the wagon out of the water, but maniac cop isn't in there, and the camera pans down to the water, and maniac cop comes out of the water and touches the pier at freeze frame. That's the end of maniac cop. So we don't even know if Jack gets off, right?
No, we don't, but I guess they just leave it like, oh, you know, he's fine, right? Because he's surrounded by every other cop. No one brings him in.
Like, there isn't evidence of people seeing regular maniac,
right? Because everyone else is dead.
Everybody else is dead.
Yeah. The only thing that's possible is that they know someone else drove that car because the group of cops said they handcuffed him and threw him in the back, and it would be impossible for him to drive that truck.
True.
Right.
That's about it. But I don't think any of them know it's that cop.
Yeah.
you know, for sure.
This is an interesting one. This was an interesting movie. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I thought it was going to be wackier. So I was honestly a little disappointed. Like, it does drag a little bit towards the end. Dan, I don't disagree. Yeah. But it was fun to watch, you know, see Tom Atkins, Bruce Campbell, Robert Zadar with his, like, it's hard to say with his crazy looking chin, because it's like, he has like a condition, but.
Right, it's still wild to see. Yeah, it's jarring.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it's weird. It's got that 80s New York aesthetic to it, which I always appreciate. Yeah, I enjoyed myself for the first time in a couple of weeks. When was the last time we watched a movie that we enjoyed?
RoboCop?
No, I mean
that was in January.
That was a movie we loved. I feel like we've had to see a movie that we didn't hate, right?
Yeah, there's got to be something. I can't think of it right now, but I'm sure there's one out there this year so far. But it has been a while.
Something, right?
Oh, Cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger. Yeah,
Cliffhanger was good. Yeah.
Yeah, we all liked Cliffhanger.
Yeah.
But right, because then we did Nothing But Trouble, which was...
Barbarella was interesting.
Yeah. I liked Barbarella just for the whole pop culture significance. Otherwise, that movie kind of sucked. Yeah, Nothing But Trouble was... It's definitely top 10 worst movies I've ever seen.
The past 2 weeks have been kind of tough, because Cool World we did last week, and that was tough, though.
Yeah, and that was kind of like a wasted opportunity movie.
Yeah.
This movie, you really get what you ask for. The title delivers.
It delivers on the promise of a maniac cop.
Yes. And I think the only thing I would have changed is I would have liked to have known why Maniac Cop is nigh immortal.
Right? Yeah.
Because he gets shot quite a bit.
He gets shot quite a bit, and they say that he didn't die, so he... I don't know.
Right. Now, are they just going for the whole Jason Voorhees thing where... Jason can't die for unexplained reasons, right? I don't know.
Right. I don't know. Must be.
Right, because, I mean, there's two more maniac cops, I'm assuming, all with Cordell being said maniac.
I think at the very least, Maniac Cop 2 is with Cordell.
Yeah, I think, yeah, the two-thirds of this movie are a lot of fun. It's very silly. Again, you have, like Anthony said, you have Bruce Campbell, Tom Atkins, two B-movie horror stars, and they're fun when they interact, you know, they ham it up a little bit. But this movie's nothing special, really. You know, it's if you like schlocky horror movies, then you're going to like this movie, but it's a very niche audience.
Sure.
Yeah. I did enjoy it. Probably it sounds like a little bit more, but it was... It was a good change of pace from the last two movies we did.
Definitely. All right. I think that's all the time we have for this week. You guys want to plug your shit?
Sure. At TheAquino122. That's my personal Twitter account. And, you know, I also run the Stranger Damies Twitter account. That's our Real Play D&D podcast. So if you need updates on when we're streaming or... about the new episodes that are coming out, or if you just want to talk D&D, movies, whatever, just hit us up there. If you like what we're doing, let us know. We would love to know how our Real Play D&D podcast is going. We enjoy it, and we hope that you're enjoying it.
Yeah, and Stranger Damies, as Dan mentioned, our D&D podcast has new episodes every other Wednesday. And hopefully, at some point we, get into a Q&A session for some of those in between weeks. We're going to constantly be trolling questions through YouTube, through Twitter, for you guys to, ask us some questions. Hopefully by the next time we stream live on, twitch.tv/gamevaultpod, I have updated the YouTubes to kind of be, you know, right up to that session. Even if the audio is a little lagging behind. So fingers crossed on that. But you can, like I said, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Stranger Damies. We have the Game Vault podcast, which is our gaming focused show. That airs every other Monday. It's on all socials at Game Vault Pod. And then we stream on twitch.tv/GameVaultPod about 5 nights a week. Wednesday is Apex After Dark, or basically Multiplayer Shooter Wednesday. Thursday, I am currently playing through Paper Mario. Friday is we alternate between recording the podcast and streaming Stranger Damies. Saturday is usually kind of being a grab bag day if whatever Jen feels like doing, if she still wants to do on Saturday, and it's usually Day by Daylight or Phasmophobia. Sunday is Dan of the Wild, where Dan here plays through Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. And on Monday is Tom's Retro Stream, where he'll play our Retro Roulette game from the podcast 1 week, and then his whatever old school game he's playing now, he's playing Suikoden. And I think by the time this airs, we've had another episode of Suikoden where we may not make much progress because he accidentally lost a very key item in that game that makes the game shorter. We lost the ability to fast travel, so now we literally have to walk everywhere. So the positive part of it is that hopefully his characters will be leveled up enough that it's not going to make any frustrating refights near the end. But yeah, and then two moments happened with that. Go watch the archives on our YouTube channel for Game Vault Pod, where he realizes he did it and come short of cursing himself out on live on the air. And then also ignores me when I try to tell him to save in a different slot, despite the fact that I'm reading ahead in the FAQ for that. So those are some pretty good moments in that podcast, or at least for me. I don't know so much for Tom. But so, yeah, check us out there. Always a fun time.
Okay, great. And this is They Called This Movie. You can find us on Spreaker and wherever you get your podcasts just by searching They Called This Movie. We're themainnaming.com. That is our main website. You go there, find us, find our articles, find our shows, bunch of great stuff up there. It's themainnaming.com. And that is also our social. So at themainnamey, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram just by searching themainnamey. We're also on TikTok. Post some videos up there. That's They Call This Movie. You can find us there at that. Follow us. We'll follow you back. They Call This Movie on TikTok. We're also a proud member of Geek Vibes Nation. You can find us at can find them at gvnation.com and on all socials and all podcast streaming apps just by searching Geek Vibes Nation. Tons of great shows. If you're into geek stuff, there is surely a show for you. That's going to wrap it up this week. This week it was Maniac Cop. The director was William Lustig. So for Dan Aquino and Mark Myers, this is Anthony DeVecchio telling William Lustig, well, you certainly made a movie, didn't you?